Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Extra, extra, hear all about it. Savage beats O'Reilly and dozens of others in latest poll. Now listen to this one. As the United States prepares for what is arguably the most open presidential election since 1928, the last time there was no incumbent president or vice president on the ballot, the Daily Telegraph's Washington correspondents compiled a list of the 100 most influential liberals and conservatives in America. So today, ladies and gentlemen, they released numbers 61 through 100. In their mind, of the most influential conservatives, and they ranked me number 63 in the most influential conservatives. Now, I'm going to read you some of these names, and I'm going to ask you, is the ranking of Savage at number 63 as one of the most influential conservatives a correct ranking? Is it too low or too high, or is it just right? Now, before we do that, I want to read you this list. So each day this week, they're going to list 20 or so. Today they listed 40, 60 through 100. Tomorrow it'll be 40 to 60. The day after 20, 40. And after that, 0 to 20 of the top conservatives. So they start with number 61 in their mind. Now remember who they are. The Telegraph UK is a, I guess it's a conservative newspaper. I'm not quite sure what they are. I don't really know what they are. But how they did this, I can't understand it. But they list Bobby Jindal, the governor-elect of Louisiana, as number 61. Now, Bobby Jindal, the Indian-American, is interesting, but no one knows him outside of Louisiana. They never heard of him until the other day. How they put him at number 61, we'll never know. But I'm proud to tell you that they made Michael Savage just one number behind Justice Antonin Scalia. Now, he's at number 62. I'm at number 63. Let's see. James Baker, the head of the Baker Commission, is number 66. So this little guy from the Bronx is now more famous than a Skull and Boneser. That's great. Now they list other people I've never heard of. They list Richard Land. I'm sorry, I don't know who he is. James Baker I've heard of because he, although he works for the Saudi government as a lawyer, they pretend he's a former Secretary of State who's as clean as an Eagle Scout. Not in my book. The Baker Commission was the Saudi Arabian Commission. Then they list David Brooks. I guess I've heard of him. I don't know what he does. I really don't. Erwin Seltzer, economist. Eric Erickson, blogger. Sorry. Gary Bauer. I remember Gary when he fell off the stage. I mean, I like Gary. He dropped out of the 2000 presidential race after he was filmed falling off a stage while flipping pancakes. All right. That's his whole claim to fame. Chuck Norris, number 71. Michael Rubin, Middle East specialist. Rubin Sandwich. John O'Sullivan, journalist. Duh. David Winston, pollster. Blank. Michael Chertoff is number 75. Well, that's interesting to me. I'm a more influential conservative than the head of Homeland Security? That's amazing to me. How could that be? How is this possible? Number 76, Tony Blankley. Number 77, Charles Katzenjammer, the big pain in the neck. He's a huge pain in the neck, Charles Katzenjammer. He hates everybody, and I can't say I don't know him. However, he's just a nasty man. Let's put it to you that way. Number 78, Brent Scowcroft. Former National Security Advisor. Okay, we know him. Number 79, Tony Carbonetti, Chief Strategist, Rudy Giuliani Campaign. Oh, God. Gee, Tony Carbonetti is number 79. We never heard of this guy. They put him above Pat Buchanan at number 80. I mean, come on. Pat Buchanan may not be what he was 20 years ago, but he's still one of the most influential conservatives around in terms of his writings, which are wonderful. They're brilliant. I don't agree with many of his positions. I agree with many of them and disagree with many of them. But he's a very influential conservative. So there they are. Numbers 61, Bobby Jindal, duh, blank. I mean, outside of Louisiana, nobody ever heard of him. And I guess it's because he's from India and therefore he's a person of color, and they had to find somebody in every list to meet that particular candidacy. Number 62, as I said, Scalia. Number 63, Michael Savage. Of course, me, they ignore the PhD. They ignore the best-selling books. They ignore almost everything. But they reluctantly put me in there at 63. So is the ranking of Savage too low, too high, or just right? Now let's go to the liberals. Here's the top liberals, according to this. You want me to do this? And I could do this. I'm enjoying this. The most influential U.S. liberals, numbers 61 to 80. I'm sorry to say that Rush Limbaugh is not on the list, but number 61 is a satirist named Stephen Colbert, who I have never heard of. Number 62 is Jerome Armstrong, who I never heard of. Number 63 is Noam Chomsky. I think he's in the PLO. Number 64 is Justice John Paul Stevens, not to be confused with the pirate. Number 65 is the pork barrel, John Murtha, the man who hates the U.S. Marines and has done more damage to the U.S. Marines than any Marine in history. Number 66 of the most important liberals is Howard Wolfson, communication chief for the Hillary Clinton campaign. Okay, what a calling that is. Number 67 is a sportscaster who I've never heard of. Number 68, never heard of. 69, Tom Daschle. Influential, he's not even. Number 70, Aaron Sorkin. Screenwriter. Well, he gives money to the Demon Cats. Number 71, Devil Patrick, governor of Massachusetts. Number 72, the Jew hater Jimmy Carter, the friend of every radical Muslim in the world. They call him number 72. Number 73, Leon Panetta, not to be confused with Pancetta, former chief of staff to Bill Clinton. Why he's up there, I don't know, since he does nothing right now. Number 74, James Carville. As I said, this is a man who's I think James Carville is the result of a mating between an alligator and a Cajun. I'm not quite sure what the species is, but he's on the list. Number 75 is a pollster named Stan Greenberg. Never heard of him. Nasty looking guy. He looks like he should be slinging locks somewhere on Delancey Street. Number 76, Congressman Joe Sestak. Sorry, never heard of him. Number 77, Barbara Streisand. Actress and singer. They consider her a very important liberal. Number 78, Robert Borosage, former advisor to Jesse Jackson's presidential campaign. What a future he's got. 79, George McGovern. They dug him out of the crypt. They consider him the 79th most important liberal. Number 80 is the woman who founded Code Stinko. Nothing but a heckler and a troublemaker who smells, I'm sure, like a piece of rotting guava on a forest floor. So there are the Telegraph's most important liberals, number 61 to 80. I read to you the most influential U.S. conservatives, number 61 to 80. And that's it. That's the whole story. How do you feel by the fact that I'm rated number 63 below Bobby Jindal? I don't mind being below Justice Antonin Scalia, who I admire greatly. But how could they put me underneath a governor who no one ever heard of until 3 days ago? When I've been on the radio for 15, okay, they put me above James Baker, which is good. They put me above the chairman of Homeland Security, Secretary of Homeland Security, which is so crazy. Charles Katzenjammer, I don't know who he is. I know he's a nasty guy on television. Pat Buchanan is 80. Bill O'Reilly, this is going to kill him. Oh, my God. Bill O'Reilly's number 82. Do you know what this is going to do to this man's ego? It is going to shrink him. It's going to shrink the man inside that he's below Michael Savage by 20 points. Peggy Noonan is 83. Ann, the Jew hater Coulter, is 84. Clarence Thomas, Supreme Court Justice, is 85. Jeb Bush is 86. How could that be? His father was president. His grandfather was a senator. My grandfather was a tailor. My father was a small merchant. How could Jeb Bush be number 86 and I'm number 63? Oh, well, let's go down the list. Senator Larry Craig is 89. They put Senator Larry Craig as a more influential conservative than Colonel Oliver North, and above Michelle Malkin, and above Clifford May, and above Henry Kissinger, and above Ron Paul, and above Bill Buckley's son, Christopher Buckley. Number 100 is General Peter Pace, retired Chairman, Joint Chiefs of Staff. The only reason they bumped him down is because he's not friendly to homosexuals. So there is the ranking of the most influential U.S. conservatives, number 61 to 100. And I think they're wrong in so many ways, but they admit that how can you really gauge this? They made it up. I mean, they did the best they could for liberals from England. But I didn't know that this is the first time since 1928 that there was no incumbent president or vice president on the ballot. And they're calling this the most open presidential election since 1928. You know, I'm starting to think that those 22 million voters on my website might not be so wrong. Now, of course, the Telegraph folks didn't mention that 22 million people have voted for me on my website. I'm sure that's higher than anyone in the top 10 will be tomorrow. But, you know, it's tempting to leave radio and run for office. I'd be curious what I could do with 20 million votes. It'd be very interesting to see what might happen if I left radio, because you can't stay in the media and run for office. But what if I said, okay, come January, March, ladies and gentlemen, I have an announcement to make. I'm leaving radio, and I'm running for the United States presidency as a third-party candidate under the Borders Language Culture Party, period, end of story. Or I could call it the American Patriot. Well, no, that's today the word patriot means something entirely different because of the liberal scum out there in the media. We'll call it the Borders Language Culture Party. This is, like all theoretical, right? But I'm not the kind of guy who could campaign. I would not kiss babies. I would not speak before the Electronic Plumbers Union. I would not go and speak before the gay and lesbian groups. In fact, I'd speak before no group at all. So you'd never hear from me again. Don't you understand how this would work out? The day I have to leave the media to run for something is the day you never hear of me again. Because A, I'm not willing to campaign. And B, if I was willing to campaign, I'd get no exposure anyway. So how does this work? So in other words, it can't work. Don't you understand that? It's a catch-22. Oh, well, let's take the callers. 1-800-449-8255. Let's begin on the West Coast, Portland, Oregon. Kevin, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Michael, I think Bobby Jindal would be proud to be on that list next to you. He's an immigrant's son. He's already served in Congress. He's now the...
Hold on, sir. I know that. I lauded Bobby Jindal the day he won, but nobody knows him outside of Louisiana. They only heard of him the other day, and they only heard of him in passing.
Well, I've heard of him, and he'll become more well-known, hopefully.
Well, you've heard of him. Why have you heard of him?
Well, I read. I know what goes on in the...
Yeah, but the average American doesn't know Bobby Jindal. That's what I'm getting at. So, therefore, his influence is quite limited.
Yeah, but his star can rise very far.
Star can rise very far, but that doesn't give him the ranking of... to be above, for example, James Baker, Michael Chertoff, Pat Buchanan, and Michael Savage. I mean, you know, throw him in there, but he's not number 61. They did this strictly because they wanted to, you know, mix it up a little bit, make it look like a little bit like America. Thank you for the call. WOR, New York City. Al, what do you think? Welcome to the show.
Hey, Michael. Michael, you're definitely number one in my book. I've been listening to
Think I'm the number one most. Let me tell you what I think. In terms of influence and influential conservatives in America, first you have to define what a conservative is and what you consider it to be a conservative. I do not consider Rush Limbaugh a conservative. I consider him a very influential Republican. He's an influential Republican. Do not confuse Republican with conservative. When has Rush Limbaugh last gone to bat for anything? I do not know of any campaign he has involved himself in, other than promoting George Bush and the Republican message. That does not make him a conservative. It makes him a very fine Republican mouthpiece.
Michael, I agree with you. But, Michael, many years ago I thought of myself as a Republican, but after listening to you and just getting a better understanding of myself, I know now that I'm not a Republican. I'm a conservative.
I'm an independent who leans towards the hard right, because that's the definition of what conservatism is. I detest the left because what they've done to this country, what they're doing to this country, what they've done to the world, and what they would do to the world unless they're stopped. Liberalism is a mental disorder. I'll be right back. Savage. We know the list is skewed of the most influential conservatives because when you consider I've had four best-selling books in a row, that would put me in the top five for sure. I can guarantee you that the people that they are going to list in the top 10 have not had four best-selling books in a row. I mean, just that alone is a gauge. So we know that this is a subjective, and they admit it, and that's okay. It's a starting point. It's a debate. I understand that. But some of it is so off the mark, it just makes no sense whatsoever. How could they rank Michael Savage as a more influential conservative than the great Henry Kissinger? I mean, that would be enough to have Henry Kissinger go back to psychotherapy, I would assume. A man as important as Kissinger, a man who's on Fox News all the time, less important by 20 numbers than the man who doesn't exist, Michael Savage? That's impossible. Or some others who you see day in and day out on the in the green rooms. I call them the green room people. They jump from green room to green room to green room. And if you want to watch a good luck, I can't watch it anymore. I can't watch cable news. I've stopped. They all break for commercials at the same second. And they go to the same story at the same moment. So I've given up on it. I can hardly watch it. I can't watch it anymore. So there it is. That's the whole story. Ken, WOR New York. Boy, time is jumping. Go ahead.
Okay,
Ken.
Michael, you are number one in Southern Connecticut here in my book. I think the only way that they're, figuring out where these people are going.
All right, I'm sorry, sir, you're breaking up. Three things you don't do in talk radio. Don't give me a talk. It's like yesterday, I had a call that almost killed the show. We're going to do it again today. The call screening is not good, so soon my mood will leave me. I'll start getting mad. And once I start to get mad and I lose my mood, I can't do talk radio. I get too angry. That's the way I am, an emotional personality. What's this nonsense that the president of France got mad at Leslie Stahl, that stunted dwarf, Leslie Stahl? Did you see her hunched up after he walked out? He should have thrown the microphone in her ugly face. It's long overdue that someone said no to that witch. Who does she think she is? Big deal, 60 Minutes.
Savage.
Well, we could do the news, too. I mean, there's plenty of news out there. What's going on is a shock in Congress with the attorney general nominee. It's amazing to me that a man of this sterling qualities would be attacked by Christopher Dodd and some other left-wing dunces calling him soft on. In other words, he doesn't agree that waterboarding is torture. What world does Chris Dodd live in? Does he not know what the Islamo-fascist is capable of doing on this earth? You know, we were once a nation of vigorous, strong men and women who could defend ourselves. We have devolved into not a nanny state, but something below a nanny state, where old crybabies with prostate cancer sit there worrying about how we're treating our worst enemies. Oh, God, you can't waterboard him. What are you talking? That's torture. Oh, God, you're right, Morris. You can't waterboard. That's torture. We can't touch. If you touch, it's terrible. We got to let him do it because the Constitution's more important than survival. Oh, God. And it's coming from Christopher Dodd. And of all people, Charles Schumer, who nominated this fellow, is now stabbing him in the back. It's like A2 Chuck. You know what I'm saying? How does he do this? How does Bigfoot Schumer get away with it? This guy would be a perfect attorney general. Now here's the other story. You see what's going on at Merrill Lynch, those of you involved? They put in Stanley O'Neill. Now, I got to tell you the story the way it really should be told in a barroom rather than on radio. Because if I don't tell it to you the way it should be told in a barroom, the story has no meaning. Merrill Lynch, one of America's premier companies, puts in a guy primarily not because of his background, but because of his skin color. In other words, they wanted to make the slick brochures look better to investors. They wanted to make it look more like America. They wanted to satisfy Jesse Jackson and Al Sharpton. So they put in East Stanley O'Neill, right? Now, East Stanley O'Neill has given the company not growth, but an $8.4 billion write-off against profits and possibly bankruptcy. That's all. They're finally throwing the bum out in his keister. Boy, did he sell them a bill of goods. The stock was at $95 a share last spring, Merrill stock. And now the stock is as low as $59 a share. Look what's going on in America's corporate world, what they're doing today to satisfy the brochures. So that's another story. Here in Massachusetts now, at Needham High School in Needham, Massachusetts, yoga classes are required for all seniors. You hear? We're facing Al-Qaeda. We're facing China. And we got liberal moron, psychopathic, sexual deviants teaching the student to take their shoes off and lay on their back on a gym floor and meditate. That's just what the doctor ordered this time, is meditation. Liberalism is a mental disorder. Do you understand? And a mental disorder like this would be humorous in other times. But they're not humorous in this time. Liberalism will get us all killed. Steve, in Appleton, Wisconsin, welcome to the Savage Nation. What's on your mind?
Michael, I owe my life to you. You are the sole reason that I got off the drug of marijuana, the extremely harmful drug that was leading me down a path to nowhere. And do you have a couple minutes? May I tell the story?
Marijuana is the most dangerous of all drugs. It is more dangerous than heroin. And you know why. Because it is considered a baby drug. It's considered an innocuous. It's considered a leaf. It's considered harmless. It's just an herb. But you know and I know that it is one of the most addictive of all substances mankind has ever played with.
It was terrible. The first second I smoked it, I became instantly addicted. I was on it for about 3 years, and I was actually in my garage listening to you, and a gentleman had called, and he went through something very tough in his life, and you got on the topic of God and willpower, and you started actually screaming at the top of your lungs to break the pipe, to throw away the pipe, to stop putting the weed in the pipe, and I did exactly that. I went in my backyard, and I threw the pipe against the railroad tracks, and I haven't touched it since.
Well, you'll never regret it. I just want to, first of all, I don't know you, and how old are you?
I'm 25 years old.
All right, so you're very young. You don't have a wife and children, I assume?
No, I don't.
Good. So you don't have that to worry about, meaning that they're going to watch you every minute and see this change in you or anything. So you've got a clean slate. You've started again. You're a born-again man. You're born again from the addiction of marijuana. So you've got a clean slate. I just want to warn you that you're going to have cravings, and the most important thing to do is stay away from anybody who smokes marijuana. Don't be in a car. If they take out a joint and pass it around, ask them. Tell them I want to leave. Don't worry what they'll do to you, because anybody – when I say do to you, I mean ostracize you. You don't want to know them. You don't want to know them. You don't want to be around them. That's the one thing you've got to know, is you're going to have to lose a lot of your so-called friends. You have to give them up. They're like old toys for a child. Your friends are nothing but old toys for a child. You understand that?
Well, yeah, I was getting the picture, and you cleared it up like you clear up many things for me in my life.
Let me tell you something. There's a prayer every morning that some people read, which says, God, keep me from evil people. What is an evil person? Does it have to be a mass murderer? Does it have to be a child rapist? Does it have to be that kind? No. An evil person could be someone who drags you into evil. And for you, being dragged into evil is smoking marijuana. Stay away from them. It's not an innocent joint. And by the way, Steve, every movie that comes out today shows happy, successful people passing a joint around like it's just something that everyone does, like a cocktail. That's utter rubbish, Steve. I know a lot of young people under 30. None of them smoke marijuana. None of them smoke marijuana. It's a gigantic brainwashing. God bless you. You're on a new road. Stay there. 1-800-449-8255. MichaelSavage.com website. There are many topics and many stories, not the least of which is my story. In this country, there are 300 million stories. This is one of them. The story of Michael Savage, from the Bronx to broadcasting, all in one lifetime. Remember that? You remember that series on television in New York City? There were 6 million lives in New York, and this is the story of one of them. I used to love that show. I love those black and white. They're going to film noir now. They were cheap black and white. They were B movies. They were called in my day. Now this film noir, they give it a new name to repackage it. I always liked B-movies. B-movies were better because you weren't focused that much on the actor. You're focused on the story, the texture, you know. What do you want to talk? Oh, the Mark skin condition. I read about that. The whole thing. Did you see that article on MichaelSavage.com? I'm going crazy today. I'm slipping again. God, I hope I'm not back where I was the other day. Where's this story about Karl Marx and his skin condition and it cost $100 million? Did you see the top left article of the most beautiful Israeli girls in the world? Israel tries controversial hot babes and bikinis campaign to draw tourists. This is hot. I put it above my own story to draw you in. This is about time Israel got their PR together. It's long overdue. Most people don't know what Israel is. They have an image that was created by the Jew haters in America and in Europe. You got to take a look at the video. Where is this one? Here. A century of communism, tens of thousands of nukes, and 100 million people dead just because Karl Marx had an irritating skin disease. It is from Reuters, and it's on my website. It says, Marx's erupting skin may have influenced writings. Karl Marx, who complained of excruciating boils, actually suffered from a chronic skin disease with known psychological effects that may well have influenced his writing. This is a great story. Sam Schuster, professor of dermatology, not to be confused with epidemiology. Sam Schuster, professor of dermatology at the University of East Anglia, believes the revolutionary thinker, hello? The communist madman? What do you mean the revolutionary thinker? See, here we go again. There's Reuters. There are the children of Nazis who become diehard socialists. Most of the writers for Reuters are grandchildren of Nazis. Make no mistake about it, and they're guilty. So they've gone over to the other side and become lifetime communists. Did anyone ever explain to you why they're like that? No, Elijah's did. Revolutionary thinker had hidradenitis, superativa. They give it an HS now, an acronym, in which the apocrine sweat glands found mainly in the armpits and groin. Ugh, leave me alone already. Become blocked and inflamed. You know what it was? It's a Freudian thing. He didn't get sex. He didn't get enough sex. See, Freud was right because Marx didn't get sex. He repressed the sexuality. And the sweat glands in his armpits and groin became blocked and inflamed. Consequently, he created a hateful ideology that resulted in 100 million deaths. In addition to reducing his ability to work, which contributed to his depressing poverty. The disease greatly reduced his self-esteem. No kidding. No girl's going to want to sleep with him because he's got blocked sweat glands in his armpits and groin. Sure, the babes were all running to Karl Marx in the old Soviet Union. Quote, this explains his self-loathing and alienation. A response reflected by the alienation Marx developed in his writing, close quote. While the disease is linked to boil-like lumps, forget about it. Wait, he had more problems? He's worse than me. Look at this. While HS is linked to boil-like lumps, the painful condition also causes more widespread infection, swelling, skin thickening, and scarring. More? It would also explain a number of other of Karl Marx's other complaints, not previously linked, such as joint pain, a painful eye condition. Oh, my God, what a wreck he was. What a wreck. Schuster based his diagnosis on an analysis of Karl Marx's extensive correspondence, in which he wrote to friends about his health and described his skin lesions as curs and swine. He wrote, quote, the bourgeoisie will remember my carbuncles until their dying day. Oh, my God. So he took out his pain by creating a social theory that he knew would cause war and death. Isn't that something? Yeah, well, we know his writings form the basis of modern communism, and they don't finish the article, which resulted in the deaths of 100 million people. So do you have any idea what I'm talking about? Most of you missed everything I just said because I mixed in things. I lip-synced my own story here. I'm warming up still. I am still warming up on the Savage Nation. I started with the list of influential conservatives. Now I'm already dead in the water. I'm not interested in anything anymore. I'm a list. Yesterday I was fired up like crazy. I gave you inspiration. I saved you from yourself. I gave you hope. I told you who the enemy is. It was a wonderful show. Today I'm adrift again. I can feel it in my head. I don't know what it is. I go up and down. Look, no one could be 5 days a week. What I do on my off day is 1,000% better than what people do on their best day. I know that anyway. That I know. That's a given, so I'm not worried. What I do by accident and the day I'm most depressed is better than the best day that one of the hucksters who tells you that conservatism is George Bush on their best day. Trust me. Lancaster, PA, Chad, you're on the Savage Nation.
Dr. Savage, you're a genius.
That's right, I am. I have always been a genius.
Up that article about Karl Marx's acne, I immediately thought of your book, and I don't know how you pegged that right, but liberalism is a mental disorder.
It explains how they behave, and there's no better example in today's news than this. There's a wonderful judge who George Bush has nominated to be the next attorney general. He is a wonderful man. He's as clean as an arrow. He's a good family man. He's a religious man. Christopher Dodd, the dotty old man from somewhere in New England, has said that because this attorney general will not condemn waterboarding, he's not fit to be an attorney general. Now, who does Chris Dodd think is our enemy? And how would Chris Dodd get information out of our enemy to stop the next World Trade Center attack? Does he have any idea who we are dealing with? The answer is no, Chris Dodd doesn't, because he has a mental disorder called liberalism, and it appears to be terminal. That's all dead air. So what did you want to say, Chad?
No, I just, about the book.
I know. It is, when I start talking, you have to stop. It stuns people. It stuns people. The alacrity of my voice at times makes people stand and salute. WOR, New York. Mark, go ahead. You're on the Savage Nation.
Yeah, I'd like to start at the beginning here. All right, next week's Election Day on Tuesday. And a lot of things are coming in the mail from the Board of Elections. And it's written in Spanish and English. And I mentioned it that I didn't like it to some coworkers. And basically one of them called me a racist.
So Wait, let's stop right there. You tell them that they're the racist for trying to impose their language on America, which is not a Spanish-speaking nation. It's an English-speaking nation. And we're not going to be conquered by the Hispanic universe. If they want to vote in Spanish, let them go back to Mexico.
About voting in Spanish was just that I think that I was making a point is that we should maintain English, and that
of course we should maintain English. When in Rome, do as the Romans do, don't do as the barbarians do. Wait a minute, my friend, let's start again. The standard line of liberals who can't argue and reason because they have a mental disorder called liberalism is they use words like racist or homophobe. Now here they are trying to impose a foreign language on the American people. In other words, to hijack our election process by having illegal aliens vote. And they're calling you a racist? They're far worse than a racist. They are racists, and they are anti-American at the same time. You could call them a subversive if you want. Why don't you throw that word in their face? Say you're a racist for hating your own country, and on top of it all, you're a subversive. See how far that gets you at work, Mark.
But what does a subversive mean? I heard
somebody who undermines a nation.
And by his thinking, he's undermined. I agree with that, but he's a lot younger than me. I'm a lot older. But he still considers me a racist because I want to preserve, like, the future. And I think we're losing it a little bit.
Tell him that a nation is defined by borders, language, and culture. This nation's language is English, and it holds the nation together. A polyglot nation cannot survive. It is not as strong. The glue is not as strong in a polyglot nation. You just look at nations that are bilingual, and can you show me one bilingual nation that is a very strong nation? Can you show me one that's really bound together by any nationalistic feelings?
No, they don't.
A large nation, one of the principal nations that is polyglot in its languages?
No, they don't.
No, you can't. No, you cannot. English is the language of the land. It is not Spanish. They're trying to not only invade the country, which they've done very successfully with the help from our corrupt politicians, but they are also now trying to undermine our culture by imposing a foreign language upon the people. If you want to speak Spanish, good luck to you. It's not the language of the land. Moreover, if you want to vote, then you better well know English, because the ballot is in the language of the land. And if you're too lazy to learn English, and you're too lazy to learn the language to even know who's voting, then you have no right to vote. But remember this, the reason the ballots are in Spanish and Arabic and God knows how many other languages is so that the Democrats can get illegal aliens to vote. I'll be right back. On a completely different topic, I've agreed to give a small talk to a religious school in December, and I'm not going to tell you where or when, to children, school children. I'm going to start devoting myself to high school, you know, children in religious schools. And the topic I want to talk about is science and God to the children, because they're all very brilliant, and they're going to go forward in life, and they're in a religious school, but they're going to be tempted by atheists and others of that stripe. And I'm going to quote, "Science without religion is lame. Religion without science is blind." Albert Einstein wrote that, and I'm going to open my speech with that particular piece to the children, because I want to give them something to take home and carry with themselves for the rest of their lives. I need to give them a shield, a bunch of shields, to protect them from what's coming when they go to college. You know, they're in the cocoon of a religious school right now, and they're protected by the good people who run it and by the word of God, which is everywhere. But the minute they leave that and go out into the Marxist, socialist, degenerate world around them, they're going to need all sorts of ammunition, or shall I say shields. So that's a good one. Science without religion is lame. Religion without science is blind. So that's, it's an opening right away. You see, I got my speeches already starting. And I'm going to talk about the evidence of God, or the evidence that God exists, from science, without trying to prove it. I'm trying to prove that God exists and that science explains an awful lot of God's work. That's all there is to it. Mark, San Antonio, Texas, welcome to the Savage Nation.
It's Mike. How's it going?
Good.
You give a lot of people the wrong impression of Marx whenever you, you know, compare Hitler to Marx. They were two totally different people. You know, Marx was looking out for the common man. And
today he would have had a show on the Fox News Channel.
I don't...
No, he could have written a book by Karl Marx, Looking Out for You. That would have been a great book.
Hey, and those are two different things, I'll tell you that. But, you know...
Well, look, I understand that Karl Marx had a bad skin condition. He was pissed off at the world, and he wrote a hateful book. But in his time, there was an aristocratic class, the Romanov family, that ruled Russia, and most of the people were eating potato skins while they were dining on caviar. So I understand where communism came from, Mike, if that's what you're arguing. Is that what you're arguing? Yeah, I can't hear you, but I think that's what you're arguing.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
Now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
We are talking about the most influential conservatives and the most influential liberals in America, according to a newspaper group from Britain, and the rankings and this and that, and where they put Michael as opposed to others, and where they put libs and opposed to others. And it's an interesting starting point, but I find it amazing that they would even include me, to be honest with you, because I am such a persona non grata in the media. I'm shocked that they put me above Henry Kissinger, Clarence Thomas, Bill O'Reilly, Pat Buchanan, Michael Chertoff. It doesn't make sense in a way. Wouldn't you assume that some of them, well, they're not really more influential than me. They're more powerful than me. There's no question Michael Chertoff's probably the most powerful conservative in the government, next to George Bush. But then again, George Bush is not a conservative by any definition. I don't know how many different ways I've tried to tell you that this is a shell game. And the way they move the socialist agenda forward is they set up a straw dog. They say that the Democrats tend to be more liberal, but that the Republicans are conservative. Well, George Bush, by any definition, is a liberal. He's a social – he's actually a fiscal Marxist in terms of his spending, or let's say a fiscal socialist, if you want to take it to the level of absolute reality. He's built the biggest government in American history. He's outspent all the presidents, including liberals. Probably three liberal presidents put together have not spent as much as George Bush has in increased spending. That's separate from the war. And on which social issues has he really helped us? Some he has, a very few, but very, very few, and they're very far between. I guess you got to be thankful for what you get. But the issue is not here to knock Bush or to support this one or that one. That's just a topic I'm telling you that we were talking about. There are many others we can continue to talk about on the Savage Nation. The phone number is 1-800-449-8255. Nancy Pelosi's ratings are in the toilet. Her own party is rejecting her. They know that she's messed up pretty badly. And the media is even catching on to that. And so in order to make up for her low ratings, she hires a flack who now comes up with an idea to propose sweeping anti-lead legislation. You hear this? Not to cut back on pork barrel spending, not to cut back on our attacks on our troops and our military, but to attack lead. It's, you know, they're out of touch with reality. And we know this. We know this. We know this. We know this. The election, by the way, I believe, has not even started. You may think it started. I don't believe it's begun at all. I think there are going to be candidates who come along that we haven't even heard of who could upset the entire election. First of all, there are too many lawyers running. Let me start with that. There may be nothing wrong with a lawyer per se. As a lawyer, we all need them. And we all use them. Some are good, some are bad, or some are in between. But why would you want to elect a lawyer to the presidency? Why would you want a Fred Thompson, a Hillary Clinton, a Barack Obama, a Rudy Giuliani, or an Edwards as a president when they're all lawyers? I believe that lawyers, I can't say they shouldn't be allowed to run, but the last thing we need are people who are a member of that profession, which is in such low esteem in the United States of America. I would say the legal profession is below that of politician, if you were to do an objective poll. And I'm not a big believer in polls. I think they can work. I mean, I understand statistics. Most of them are biased. But there is a way to do a legitimate poll. I haven't seen too many recently. But I would say that lawyer would be below that of politician, truthfully. And I'm not, too happy with the idea that we're going to elect a lawyer to the presidency. The last thing we need is another lawyer who has to consult law books, you know, in a time like this that we live in a time of terror. I don't want anyone to have to go to lawyers to figure out what to do if we're attacked here on our soil again. I don't want him to run it by some law school graduate. You need a man of action, preferably a man or a woman even, who has run a business and has created the business from the ground up and done an honest job and hasn't robbed anybody. You know, that's what we really need, someone who's been used to making decisions and selling those decisions. A good businessman would be the best thing the country could have. A good, honest businessman is what we need right now. Somebody who can bring the thinking of a private sector into the presidency is what I would think. Somebody who's worked in the real world as opposed to in politics or in law. That's what I think, you know. Now I'm going to take your callers, the calls from the callers. Oh, and I also mentioned that I'm going to give a small talk on December 2nd to a group of school children entitled God and Science or Science and God. And I don't exactly know what I'm going to say, but I'm going to give the children some ammunition to take with them when they leave this religious school and they go out into the secular world where they're going to be challenged on a daily basis by pot-smoking liberals with a mental disorder. Los Angeles, Aaron on 8:30 on the dial. Welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hello, Michael, and thank you for taking my what I wanted to tell you is I wanted to relate my experience trying to produce a pro-American film in Hollywood. And basically what I encountered was being told outright by film executives that they could not make a movie in good conscience supporting the troops.
Oh, my God. So, Aaron, you're a bona fide producer in Hollywood?
I am, and as a matter of fact, I took my fight all the way, after I encountered that, I took my fight all the way up to Rupert Murdoch. I wrote him a heartfelt letter, and I said, look, there's no way a movie like this is going to get made unless you get behind it. And
yeah.
Basically, he passed me off to a Democratic lackey that runs his company. And
yeah, well, Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer had a very shiny nose. The fact of the matter is Murdoch is not the conservative he pretended to be. He's a businessman. He knows which way the wind blows in Hollywood. He may own Fox Searchlight Movies or whatever he owns, but the fact of the matter is it's infested with liberals. They make all the decisions. Aaron, all the anti-war movies that have come out, none of them are going to make any money. You know that.
I know, but that's the ultimate irony, isn't it, Michael? I mean, you say it's a business, but ultimately in Hollywood, politics trumps business. I have no doubt in my mind that if a pro-troops movie came out supporting the war effort, people would be lining up in droves. But Hollywood,
Aaron, it would at least gross $100 to $200 million. The people are dying to say thank you to the troops. They're dying to see the heroism that goes on over there, the sacrifices that goes on over there. It's just a shame that the red diaper doper baby homosexuals run Hollywood. And I don't know how to put it any other way but the straight way and the blunt way. The agencies that book everybody, you know who they are. You know who the heads of these agencies are. Do I have to spell it out to you? Most of them are open homosexuals, some of whom left their wives and children to go with other men. They are degenerates. They're like the ancient Romans, and they're a disgrace. Unfortunately, they put out the images that the entire world sees and thinks that America is. They are sick in the head, and they're a shame to this country.
I have to tell you, Michael, that there are, you know, those of us here who are, you know, fighting the fight. We're in the trenches. We're trying to make good movies. And it's kind of like being Christians in ancient Rome. We sort of feel each other out in the darkness, you know. And
Aaron, you know what I call conservatives in Hollywood? I call you guys Murano conservatives. You know what I mean, don't you?
Yes, they do.
As a producer, you know what I mean. The Muranos were Jews who, after the Inquisition, in fact, during the Inquisition in Spain, pretended to be converted to Catholicism but continued to practice their religion of Judaism in dark basements because they would have been killed if they were shown to be Jewish in Catholic Spain. It's the same thing with conservatives in Hollywood. They are Murano conservatives. Aaron, without asking you the names, have you done major league movies?
Yes, I actually have a pretty big film coming out in February starring Jason Statham.
And, well, what would your budget be for a movie like this?
That film is $20 million.
What would the budget be for a war movie?
The one I wanted to do would probably at least be $50 million. But it was it's a great story, and it's a story.
Well, Aaron, let me explain something. I right now have been in discussions for 6 months with various Hollywood folks about doing my life story. They know I have an audience of at least $10 million. They did the math. 10 times 10 is $100 million gross. Now, if you add to that the people who never heard of me who might go because they heard about me, you might see a gross of $150 million. It's a slam dunk. I'm running into a very similar story, Aaron. I'm going to have this movie done. It's a documentary. I mean, if Michael Moore can do the left-wing slant, somebody can do a documentary about Michael Savage. That's going to make an awful lot of money for an awful lot of people, Aaron. Would you like to produce it?
I would love to. I mean, I'm a huge fan of yours. And
well, I have a quite an interesting team assembled, Aaron. Without going into details, one of my dearest friends had one of the biggest hits of last year. He's a very good conservative, but he's hardwired into Hollywood because he made them a lot of money. The fact of the matter is, you know what he said to me? He said, don't worry about distribution. He said, just make sure you make the best documentary you can. He said, I'll get you distribution. He said, it doesn't matter whether they're liberal or conservative. He said, if the movie is good, he said, they're all businessmen and it will be distributed. Now, I'm shocked that you didn't hear the same thing about your war movie. That's what I'm surprised. But no, well, I'm not surprised because the war is a religion for these people, being anti-war, anti-military, and anti-Bush. I understand that. That is the equivalent. That's their doxy, Aaron. It's their religion.
That's for sure. That's for sure. And
Aaron, may I ask you to do this? Would you be kind enough to give a contact to my producer on the other line when we get off? I will guarantee you that I will email you when we get off the line. How did you find me in the midst of L.A. on all those stations?
Well, you know, I used to struggle listening to you on 8. I rediscovered you on 8:30, so that's where I hear you every day.
Are you in West Hollywood? Where are you?
Yeah, I'm in the Culver City area.
Okay. Yeah, I go down. I have a place down there. I haven't been there recently, but I'm going to be spending a lot more time in L.A. in the coming months. I've made a decision to spend a lot more time in L.A. I happen to like the city. I'm one of the few people who prefer it to San Francisco. I find San Francisco to be like a sleepy village that puts you to sleep. It's like a city that's on drugs and drugs you. You know, it's a very quiet, sleepy place that can catch you off guard and really do you a lot of harm. L.A., on the other hand, is brash. It's loud. It's kind of ugly in places and stunning in others. If you go up in the hills and you look down at the lights as they come on at night, is it not one of the wonders of the earth to see the valley below you, the valley of Los Angeles, and all of the lights on below you? It's amazing. It's gorgeous.
That's an incredible view. It's astounding.
Yeah. Yeah, I like to go above the Hollywood Hills and look down upon the city at night. It's unbelievably exciting. But what I see, Aaron, may be different than what other people see. What I see is a city that intellectually is given over to creating the images that not only America feeds on, but the world feeds on. And I wonder at how in the world it could have become what it has become, how it has become so maniacally evil, and how it has become so maniacally anti-family, anti-God, anti-military. I don't understand how this town has become so single-mindedly anti-American.
I don't understand it either, Michael, because I have to tell you that a lot of people that I deal with, they're very intelligent, they're on the surface really great people, but when it comes to the political arena, things get a little bizarre.
Well, let me tell you a story, and you and everyone else, Aaron, and I'm not going to tell you who. Someone very close to me encountered the head of the most powerful talent agency in Hollywood, and I'm not going to mention the name of the company, okay? This individual had been married with children, left his wife to become a homosexual with men. In other words, he destroyed his children unto the third generation because of his sexual appetites, which he couldn't control. Well, the individual I know is straight, and he said to the man in a social setting, how is it that you can put the gay agenda ahead of national security? Don't you understand that the Islamofascist kills homosexuals? And the head of this agency said to him, yes, we know that, but what's most important to us is getting gay marriage through first and the rest of our agenda then. The other stuff, he said, is very unimportant to us. He said that right to his face, Aaron.
Well, that comes out of a lot of egocentrism, and they can't step outside of their own needs and wants and see the larger picture. And to me, that's why Hollywood's out of touch with the audience. I mean, you just see the box office shrinking and shrinking, and to have movie stars and coming out and insulting half their audience is like unheard of. I mean, why would you want to destroy your own career by coming out and making absurd political statements and visiting Hugo Chavez in Venezuela and knowing half your audience is not going to go see your movies anymore?
You're talking about a guy like Sean Penn, who to me is a mentally deranged individual. Or in my mind, something else explains his odd behavior. Aaron, please stay on the line. This is a great conversation about a producer fighting the liberal establishment in Hollywood. I'll be right back.
Savage.
The Savage Nation. So look, this is what makes talk radio interesting, is you get a caller who is real in a real industry that we're interested in. And this caller, who is not going to be identified, is a bona fide Hollywood producer. We checked it out. And he's saying he can't understand why he can't make a pro-American war movie. And he was told that they would never make one in Hollywood. Aaron, welcome back to the Savage Nation. We also talked about why they would alienate half their audience, such as Sean Penn running to Hugo Chavez, the dictator of Venezuela, who has taken away all of the press freedoms of the country, disallowed opposition parties. What are these people thinking, Aaron?
I just think that, you know, ever since the decline of the studio system, which basically, you know, controlled all their talents' lives, that these people are just running around rampant, just shooting off their mouths and not even realizing that it's going to basically rebound on them. I mean, in the old...
You made me laugh because I did a piece about a year ago about John Scungilli, the man who secretly controls Hollywood. Have you ever heard the John Scungilli piece?
Yeah.
You remember where he says, here's how we used to control him. We put him in a motel in Palm Springs. If they want boys, we give them boys. If they want girls, we give them girls. We try that for 3 days. If that doesn't work, we kill them.
Right.
I think that's how it used to be done. I think some of them could use that shock therapy today. But what you say, you know, applies to the newspapers as well, Aaron. How do you explain a guy like Pinch Sulzberger inherits a great enterprise, a great American institution like the New York Times from his father and grandfather, and despite all of the cries of the boards of director or the board of directors, the stockholders, he continues to slash and burn his own newspaper because of his liberal orientation, Aaron. It's the same thing there. They're not in touch with reality.
Reminds me of that scene in Citizen Kane where his accountant tells him, you know, that the paper's losing money every year. And he says, well, I'm just going to go on printing the way I print because I can go on doing it for another 100 years, you know.
Hey, Aaron, the next time I'm in L.A., I'm going to give you a call. I'll give you a call. We'll have a cigarette together. I'll be right back.
Savage.
It is the Savage Nation, 1-800-449-8255 phone number, michaelsavage.com website. Topics are yours. I've put a few out there. I'm not really into topics today. I don't know why. I'm not that far. Well, I do want to talk about torture for a minute. That's a good topic. We have insane liberals in Congress, such as Christopher Dodd, who is saying he's going to put the kibosh on Bush's appointment for attorney general. And he's going to do it because the recommended appointee does not condemn waterboarding and won't admit that it's torture. Now, the question is, how would you get information out of a man who is a diehard Muslim fanatic who, let's say, has planted a bomb in Times Square in an undisclosed location, and the clock is ticking and you've got 5 minutes to find it and to defuse it? You can't use waterboarding. You can't pull his nails out. What can you use, Mr. Dodd? See, you can't ask him those questions. Because if you did, you'd realize you'd get a tilt out of him. His eyes would roll in his head. Now, waterboarding is not torture. Let me explain what torture is. You liberals want to know what torture is? Here's the answer, Mr. Liberal. An article came out today on North Korea reveals childhood torture. You want to hear what torture is? Here's a man who has escaped from North Korea, who says he was tortured as a teenager. He watched as his mother and brother were executed, and until he was 20 years old, North Korean Shin Dong-yuk had heard of neither Kim Il-sung or Kim Jong-il. Now, what do you mean by that? In a testimony to stunned journalists, Mr. Shin, the first North Korean defector to the South, who was born in the North's notorious gulag, revealed a nightmarish world in which inmates and their children suffer lifetime incarceration, are kept ignorant of outside society, and undergo forms of torture that are medieval in their barbarism. And so he gave a press conference, and he tried to tell the world about this. The people who were there were shocked by what they heard about what's going on in North Korea. They knew it was bad, but they had no idea how bad it really was. We know that there's a gulag, that is a gulag, it's like the Gulag Archipelago. In other words, a whole constellation of prison camps thought to hold more than 200,000 political prisoners and their families. And here is what he said real torture was, and I'll read you some of it. When Mr. Shin was 13, his mother and brother attempted an escape unsuccessfully. That day, a civilian car met Mr. Shin outside the camp school. Remember, he was born in the camp. He was driven to a secret underground location. There, guards demanded details of the plot. He was 13. Mr. Shin was ignorant of the plot. He didn't know about it. He was suspended over a fire. When he screamed, a hook was hacked into his groin. Unconscious, he was slung into a cell with a skeletal old man. The man cared for the child's festering injuries and gave him his own meager rations. It was the first time Mr. Shin had ever received affection from another human. He says, I will never forget him. I came to love him more than my parents. After 7 months, Mr. Shin was released to witness his mother's hanging and his brother's execution by shooting. Mr. Shin noticed his father in tears, but he had only one emotion. I was furious with them. As a result of their crimes, I was subject to torture, meaning he was furious at his own parents. You hear this? Life continued. His niece was raped and killed by guards. He dropped a sewing machine. Guards chopped off a fingertip with a knife. Constantly hungry, he once found 3 corn kernels in a pile of cow manure, his lucky day. Unaware of any world beyond the wire, his dreams were to excel at work, gain permission to marry, or become a team leader. Then in 2004, he befriended a new prisoner who had escaped to China, where he was apprehended, returned to North Korea, and sent to the prison camp. Secretly, the inmate told Mr. Shin of the outside world. That knowledge consumed him. For the first time, work became intolerable. You hear the story? In other words, once he learned there was a world outside the wire, he couldn't even take it anymore. On January 2nd, 2005, while collecting firewood in the mountains, Mr. Shin escaped lacerating his legs on electrified barbed wire. He reached China and found asylum at South Korea's Shanghai consulate. There, traumatized by nightmares, he began writing about his life. Anyway, it goes on. He says, ask what message you would like to send to Kim Jong-il. Mr. Shin thought for a moment, then said quickly, quote, I'd ask him to take 1 hour to think about the situation in the camps, close quote. North Korean reveals childhood torture. Libs want to know what torture is. They're concerned about waterboarding Islamo-fascists who want to set off a nuclear device in Times Square. They have no idea what they're doing. The fact of the matter is liberalism is a mental disorder. And all you've got to ask them the next time they tell you that waterboarding is torture and Bush wants to torture and the attorney general should not be condoning torture or we lose our constitution, blah, 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 blah. Just say to them, Mr. Liberal or Mrs. Liberal, I want you to stop for a minute. I want you to think for a minute. A bomb has been planted in your hometown or in your apartment building. It's a nuclear device, a dirty bomb. They've got 5 minutes to find it, and they caught the guy who put it there. How would you get it out of him? How would you get the information out of that man? Don't let them walk away from you. Make them answer the question. And maybe, just maybe, you can convert one liberal to reality. I doubt it. I doubt it. I just doubt it. But there's an example of what torture really is. I thought I would share it with you. Now let's go to Atlanta, Georgia. WSB Michael, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
I cannot believe I'm talking to Michael Savage. I am such a fan, and I'm sort of nervous. I'm sorry. I haven't.
All right, let me calm you down. I'm not going to be a wise guy. I know it can be intimidating to talk to a lot of people on the radio, but remember, make believe you and I know each other, and it's just a phone conversation. So pick it up from there.
All right, sir. I think George Bush actually bamboozled the Democrats into passing bills that would actually spend more money. And the reason why I say that is remember when he was on the World Trade Towers after the
I have to stop you right there, Michael. George Bush didn't bamboozle anybody. He's the biggest spender in American history. Come on. He's expanded every government program there was. Why would he have created a prescription drug program, which is one of the biggest expansions of government in history? He did that on his own. He didn't need the Democrats to become a big spender.
I understand what you're saying, sir, and if you can give me just 1 second, I can explain. When the stock market fell, okay, what he did is he tried to figure out what can he do to get the economy back in order. So what he did is he signed Ted Kennedy's bill, which is astronomically ridiculous.
Well, I want to stop you right there, Michael. You see, I have the facts, not just an opinion. I have in my hand real annual growth in selected agencies by president, and I can read you the list. Each governmental agency, I can tell you what Johnson, Nixon, Carter, Reagan, G.H.W. Bush, Clinton, G.W. Bush, and G.W. Bush did in the second administration, did in terms of spending and percentages, increases or decreases in each department. You're not going to like what you hear. In agriculture, let's start with Johnson. I'm not going to read you all of them. He reduced the spending in agriculture. Bush raised it by almost 5%. In commerce, it went down 5.7% under Johnson. It went up 3.3% under Bush. In energy, it went down 5% under Johnson. It went up 4% under Bush. Let's go to the whopping giant. In the State Department, it went up 3.6% under Johnson. It went up 11.5% under George W. Bush in the second term. It had gone up 10% in the first term. That means it went up 21% under George Bush. In the Veterans Administration, thankfully, it has gone up somewhat under Bush. They certainly need it. Let's look at the last area, international assistance, meaning foreign aid. Okay, foreign aid. Johnson, it went down 5.6%. He lowered it by 5.6%. Nixon lowered it by 1.5%. Jimmy, the commie-loving Carter, raised it by 13%. Reagan lowered it by 11%. G.H.W. Bush, Daddy Bush, raised it by 24%. Did you hear that one? Clinton lowered it by 1.5%. That's in foreign aid. George W. Bush, first term, up 3.8. Second term through today, 5.6%, which means overall he's raised it 10%. The Bushes are the biggest spenders in American history. They're bigger than Johnson was. They're bigger than Carter was. Don't you understand that you've been hoodwinked? or not. Rose in San Diego, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hi, Michael Savage. I first of all, I want to say that you sound so great today. You must be doing something right. I don't know what it
okay.
is, but you're
and what that's fantastic. Good. And what's on your mind, please?
Along those lines, I wanted to get your professional opinion on the yoga in schools. Do you stereotype these types of things as spiritual issues or moral issues, like raw foods, yoga, that sort of thing?
No, I do not. I absolutely do not. I come from an alternative medical background, and I, of all people, would not do that. I think it's a gigantic waste of time. The children in an age that we are living in need to learn something more than how to meditate.
Mm-hmm. And if it was,
in other words, if they want to take yoga after school, or take up the accordion, or take up weightlifting, or take up running or mountain climbing, that's their right to do so. It has no place in an academic curriculum. It is absurd to waste the children's time, and moreover, to waste taxpayer money on yoga.
Mm-hmm. But is it possible that yoga does help people and should be given the credit that it is due?
There are many things that help people that do not belong in a public school curriculum. Many things help people, but they don't belong in a public school setting. So I don't see this as a challenge to organized religion at all. I don't see it in that light. It's a waste of time for the kids.
Mm-hmm.
That's how I look at it. Yeah, and remember, I've written books on homeopathy, herbal medicine, vitamins, you name it. So I'm very cognizant of the alternative medical world. However, I don't believe that the child should be forced to take his shoes off and lay on a mat for 30 or 40 minutes a day simply because some whack job in Massachusetts who runs the school thinks it would be good for him.
Hmm.
I'll tell you what also would be good for boys today would be studying karate. I'd rather see that there'd be enforced karate lessons for everyone in America. Or how about putting a rifle range in the basement in an age of Islamofascism? Maybe learning how to shoot a gun would be useful for Americans today, since we have the most passive generation in American history. People who don't even know how to shoot a BB gun. You think it might be a useful thing to learn how to shoot a rifle?
Exactly. That's where I think we need to be looking at our values, is what are our values?
Fine. If you want to impose a value that's of universal value to America, I would think you should put a rifle range in every high school in America. The only rule would be if a child is on Ritalin or antidepressants, they cannot use the rifle range. And if any instructor is on Ritalin or antidepressants, they can't be an instructor in the rifle range, which means that the rifle range would never be used in American schools today. Thanks for the call. I'll be right back. It's 51 minutes after the hour. You're listening to the Savage Nation. Many topics, 1-800-449-8255. Las Vegas, Nevada. Mike, welcome to the Savage Nation from K-Dawn. What's on your mind?
Hi, thanks for taking my call, Mike. Real quick, wanted to say thank you for remembering the troops along with your caller from California.
Wait. Which caller?
The director. Aaron, I believe his name was.
All right. Well, he has nothing. He has nothing to do with the. Oh, he wanted to do a pro troop movie. Okay, got it. All right. So, what's the position?
I can tell you firsthand, Mike. It's very important to remember the troops. I'm in the Air Force. Fly C-130s. I've done 4 deployments to Iraq, and those guys over there, as far as the Army and the Marine guys, they're living and dying literally for everybody back here. So.
Well, that's why I donated money to Lieutenant Colonel Chisani's Defense Fund, $30,000 of my own money, and my listeners have donated over $250,000. At least I try to put some seed money out there and put my money where my mouth is, and I think that's very important. These guys are on the front lines, and they're being shafted by their own government in many cases.
Right. Well, here, real quick, Mike, wanted you to clear something up for me. I would consider myself a patriot and a warrior. And, you know, I've been trying to do my part, but I would also consider myself a liberal. And I would like you to explain to me how I can be trusted to fly a $30 million airplane and to serve my country and risk my life for my country, but also have.
I don't know. That's a tough question. Now, being a liberal with a mental disorder does not mean you're disqualified from operating heavy machinery. There are many people who are mentally disordered who have perfectly normal lives operating heavy machinery. But on a serious note, Mike, how would you extract information from a terrorist in less than 5 minutes?
And tell somebody who has risked their lives for you and for everybody.
No, whoa, Mike, how would you extract information from a terrorist in less than 5 minutes? Let's see what kind of liberal you are. How would you get that information out of him?
I think given my job, I should probably not answer that question.
What do you mean you shouldn't answer the question? Nobody knows who you are.
Well, that's beside the point, though, sir.
You're defining yourself as a liberal. You're challenging me as a conservative, and I'm asking you a question that should define you as a liberal. I'm asking you a down-to-earth question. You're a warrior. You say you fly C-130s. I have to take you on your word. So I want to know how such a brave warrior such as yourself would extract information from a terrorist in less than 5 minutes. The bomb is ticking. You have 5 minutes. Do you go to the ACLU and ask them what you can do, or do you have some methods that you might employ that I'm not aware of that would work?
I would consider myself a liberal secondary to a warrior.
Then please help us. How would a liberal warrior then extract information from a terrorist in less than 5 minutes?
I'm trying to answer your question, sir. Put in a situation such as we're in now, I would do what I had to do to serve my country.
So, in other words, you would use any method necessary to save fellow countrymen, right?
I believe that saving ourselves, as far as Americans, is more important than saving the world, yes.
All right, so you don't agree with Chris Dodd that waterboarding is torture, then?
Well, that's a specific issue, and I'm talking generally.
Well, I'm talking about a very specific issue. Chris Dodd says you can't waterboard somebody, so he's going to put the thumbs down on George Bush's appointment for attorney general. And I'm trying to say that if you have 5 minutes to find out where the bomb is hidden, what methods are acceptable, Mr. Dodd? Now, Mr. Dodd isn't on the show, but you're a self-professed liberal and a warrior, and you're saying that you would use any method necessary. I think that's what you said.
I understand where you're going with this argument, sir, but my only point is I know lots.
Oh, let me ask you another question. How would you protect our border since you're a warrior? Do you think we should have open borders with Mexico, or do we have a right to defend our borders?
Flying around the world, I've learned one thing that's going to be the downfall of America, if there is to be one. And it's what we're experiencing right now between you and I. And that is the closed-minded, aggressive nature of people like
you. So you won't answer the question. I don't believe you're a pilot. I believe you're a faker. And I believe you're a faker because you won't answer a straight question. The pilots I know will answer a question straight up, even if they disagree with you. I think you came up with a question, a statement about who you are that's not real. How can you not even answer a question about borders? If you say you're a warrior and you believe in America, how could you be against the most fundamental definition of a nation, which is the border? How can you say you wouldn't protect the border?
I'm not against the border. We weren't even talking about that, sir. You didn't even ask.
Look, we can't sit here and chat like we know each other, like we have unlimited time. I'm running a radio show here, and I have to move it along rather rapidly. We're trying to make it interesting to people listening to this show across America. I'm asking you, you're a self-professed liberal, you're a warrior. You're telling me that you don't have an answer to the question about borders either. I don't understand, then, how do you define yourself as a liberal?
Well, here's my only point.
What issue makes you a liberal? Let's put it to you that way. I'll give it back to you. Take control. What makes you a liberal?
That liberals are people with a mental disorder is ignorant, sir. That's my only point.
Well, then I guess the 300,000 people who bought it are all ignoramuses, and only you know that. Would you assume that you know? Would you say that you can speak about everyone who bought that book and agrees with it, that they're all ignoramuses? Gone now? Yeah, you're as much a pilot as my dog Teddy is. You're closer to what comes out of Teddy's rear end than you are to what comes out of Teddy's mouth. I knew that I would finally get this guy for what he was. See, they set it up. These libs are pretty good. He wouldn't answer the question. I know what it was. It's the bathhouse Johnny. That's all it is. The bathhouse Johnnies can't take it because they understand that we know who they are. We know they're sick in the head. They're morally degenerate, polluted. They're more polluted than an outhouse, than a cistern. And they are the people who are destroying this country. And I'm going to tell you something else. Those bathhouse Johnnies are the reason the Muslim fanatics are willing to die for their cause. You won't read this in the media. You won't hear about it in the media. They'd rather die than see their son become a gay. You don't know that. You know nothing about Islam. You know nothing about Muslims. But if you actually talk to a Muslim, they'd rather die and blow somebody up than see their son become a homosexual, their daughter become a whore. And that's what they hate about America. It's not the foreign policy. It's the polluted social policy.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
We are talking about torture. We are talking about the top U.S. conservatives and liberals and where I'm rated and what you think of that. But I think that the biggest topic today has been the issue of torture, because you have a guy like Chris Dodd who is disconnected from reality, as all the politicians seem to be, or most of them. Let's put it to you that way. But a guy like Chris Dodd of Connecticut is more so disconnected than most. Here's a man who says he's not going to take Bush's appointment for the attorney generalship. He's going to reject it because the man won't admit that waterboarding is torture. So my question to Chris Dodd and all of you other good liberals is this. A dirty bomb is ticking somewhere in the United States of America. Let's make it Times Square, Manhattan, rush hour. It's set to go off at 5 o'clock in rush hour, God forbid. They caught the guy who planted it. They have him in a holding cell. You have 5 minutes to extract the information from this guy as to where that bomb is to defuse it. Would you use waterboarding, or would you use other methods, or would you consult the ACLU and hold a hearing? That's the question of the day. You have to ask liberals real questions and make them answer you, or else you're talking, basically you're talking trash. You're wasting your time. Rick, KNEW, your opinion, please. Go ahead on the Savage Nation.
Yes, Dr. Savage, I'm a liberal of San Francisco. I've called your show before, and I just want to tell you, if terrorism is involved, there is no such thing as torture, but it has to be a two-way street. If the Americans get caught and get tortured, the Americans cannot sit around and be upset at the world for what's going on. But when terrorists...
Now that is a great point, and I've had the same exact argument or thinking process to myself. I actually oppose torture, because if we condone it, then we have to permit it. We're going to say, well, then what right have we to say that they shouldn't torture in other countries? I understand that. But we're living in different times, Rick. That's the problem.
Absolutely. And we have to change our methods for the times we live in. We've never experienced things like this before. So I believe the pilot that called in was a phony. And we do need to save ourselves first before we need to save the world. So anything goes. You know, there is no such thing as torture when the security of this country is at stake. And those damn liberals should understand that. You know, they bring shame to the label.
Thank you for being an honest liberal, probably a real one. God only knows. 1-800-449-8255, phone number, michaelsavage.com. Let's go to Salt Lake City. Daniel, welcome to the program. What's on your mind?
Hi, Dr. Savage, long-time listener. I'd like to ask you a question that I've wanted to ask you for such a long time. First of all, I'd like to say my wife and I pray for your health and well-being each night.
Thank you.
But I'd like to say
I appreciate. I don't want to give it lip service. I believe in prayer. B, I know there's a God, and C, every prayer matters to me, so thank you for that.
No problem, sir. And anytime you're in Salt Lake, I'll treat you to dinner.
Okay.
I just wanted to say that I really love this country, and I feel the only way that we, the little people, can change the course that we're on is to identify and fire every one of the Pelosi's, the Feinsteins, and replace them with good, honest Americans like you, sir. And at this time, I'd like to invite you to run for the Senate or House of Republicans in the state of California.
That's very noble of you. Now, what's interesting is that what's coming up in the elections has not happened in this country since the 1920s. What's also interesting is that Feinstein's ratings have plummeted by 20 points or 10 points. Boxers have plummeted by the same. Their approval ratings are as low as they've ever been. People know that they're just fat cat liars out for themselves. Even Democrats know that Boxer and Feinstein are the greediest pigs in a dress they've ever seen. They're not fooled by the year of the woman anymore or the big mouth with the golden toilet seat. They know that they belong on toilet seats, the two of them, in an outhouse in Manchuria. The problem is California's so whacked out liberal socialist, it's impossible for anybody who's straight up like me to win. So that's number one. Sure, I'd run for it if I had a chance, but I'm also a realist. I don't run in any race where I don't have a chance. No chance to win that race. Number two, I'm too honest. I don't want to have to raise $60 to $80 million to run for the U.S. Senate, Daniel. So the fact of the matter is you're going to be stuck with these deadbeats on golden toilet seats for a very long period of time because honest men like me are never going to run against them.
I think this is the first time I disagree with you. I think the people are crying for change. We are so sick of the leadership. That's why the Congress polls are so bad that everyone is so disgusted with politics.
Yeah,
and how
maybe in Utah I could be a senator. There are states that I could run for the U.S. Senate that I'm not qualified to run, where I'm not qualified to run because I'm not a resident. But did you know that a congressional seat, anyone can run for it, even someone who doesn't live in the state? Are you aware of that?
Well, I know that Senator Hatch, I actually know his son, who's the bishop in my ward. I'm Mormon.
God bless you. I never met a Mormon I didn't like, and I mean that sincerely, and it's not a joke. I've done business with Mormons going back to my early days in the herbal business. They're all straight-up wonderful people. But having said that, Daniel, there are conservative states where a man such as myself could run and win, but I don't live there. Then there are socialist republics like California, where a true Republican is as rare as the condor. And the fact of the matter is we are an extinct species. The only people who can run and win in this state are either leftists, socialists, or communists. No one else need apply for the job. And that is because the elections are rigged. The elections are rigged because they permit illegal aliens to vote in this state. They won't tell you that. But that's how the two hags won to begin with, if you want to know the truth. That's my opinion. The two hags were not that popular when they started out. These two interlopers, these two harridans, got here by using illegal aliens by the busload to become U.S. senators. And then they bought their way in, put their hooks into the election process. They own the newspapers. They own the polls. They own virtually every outlet of the media. There's no chance. We're living in a tyranny in the state of California. There's no two-party system, and there hasn't been one here since Ronald Reagan died. Thank you for the call. I have to take a quick break. How many minutes do I have to take that quick break? I don't even know anymore. I lost 3 big minutes. How do you like that? We have 3 big minutes. Let's go to New York City. Jim, WOR, welcome to the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Good evening, Dr. Savage.
Hello. What's on your mind?
Yes, listen. Love the show. I wanted to tell you about the Koran. I recommend that all your listeners read the Koran. I don't believe that the religion has been hijacked. I believe that the religion is unfortunately very venomous. I read it with an open mind. I got tired of listening to all these guys talking about a misunderstanding, talking about out of context. And when you read it, you will see that when this document calls Jews the same as apes, when they tell us that Christians and Jews and even Hindus should be avoided, that there's something wrong with this religion.
And yeah, it's a hateful religion, and I'm not going to mince words. Any book that says everyone else is below them and their religion is to be avoided, what would you define that religion as? Exclusionist or inclusive? I mean, we live in a country that likes to talk. Liberals like to talk about inclusiveness and inclusion. So they bring in 10,000, 20,000, 50,000 women wearing 15th century medieval dresses, meaning burqas. What kind of sanity is that to bring in people who believe in the death of freedom, not in the openness of freedom? We have the U.S. Constitution versus the Koran. They're incompatible. It's as simple as that. Either the Koran goes through a revisionist period in its history, or they should stop being able to broadcast that hatred. I've read the book. I can quote sutra after sutra, which calls for the death of infidels, the killing of Jews and Christians, the cutting off of heads. What kind of religion is this? There is no other religion on earth that teaches kill thy neighbor, not love thy neighbor. I've never seen anything like it. I don't know how this government permits it, to be honest with you. Unless the Muslims reform their religion and revise the principal document of that religion, we are going to go to a civil war in this country eventually. There's no way that the U.S. Constitution and the Quran are compatible. Absolutely incompatible. It's that simple. And if you disagree with me, prove me wrong. Show me where the Quran does not say, kill the infidel, put a knife to his neck if he doesn't convert, because I will show you where it does say that. Show me where it does not insult Christians and Jews and Hindus and Buddhists and consider them lower than the lowest of Muslim. Show me where it does not say that, and I'll admit that I'm wrong. The fact of the matter is, just as the Christian Bible has gone through many revisions and many, many serious periods in history of the periods of Christianity where the Bible was revised, Islam has never revised the Quran. Therefore, they are living with a 7th century document in the 21st century, which is why we now have the Hitler of our times all over again come back from the crypt to try to impose not Nazism, but Islamo-Nazism on the world. I can't call it anything else. I wish I could. And that's the unfortunate truth. I'll be back to take your calls on this and other topics right here on the Savage Nation. Be sure to be here or be absolutely nowhere. Savage. Our friend Audrey Hudson is here to give us an update on the Mexican man who crossed the border 76 times with a drug-resistant form of TB. Audrey, what's the latest on this horrendous cover-up?
The Senate Homeland Security Committee is now investigating the case of the Mexican national who crossed the border 76 times. Apparently, when the case with Mr. Speaker happened earlier this spring that you talked about, at the same time that Congress was investigating, they had Department of Homeland Security officials come before the committee to tell them what was going on in the Speaker case, and it seems like there was an attempt to cover up what was going on the Mexican border. Mr. Speaker came across the Canadian border. So as you can imagine, the chairman and the ranking member of the Senate committee are a little off-put by this, and they're investigating. And they sent a letter today to Mr. Chertoff at Homeland and also to Mr. Leavitt at the Health and Human Services to find out what did they know and when did they know it. It looks like both agencies are kind of playing blame games, like Homeland Security is saying, well, CDC, Centers for Disease Control, didn't tell us this, and CDC is saying, oh, yes, we did.
Can you give us some background on the reaction to this case and the senators involved?
Well, when our article hit last week, it happened to coincide with a hearing that the Senate Homeland Security Committee was having on the terrorist watch lists and the border controls. So the chairman of that committee is Senator Joe Lieberman of Connecticut, and the ranking member is Senator Susan Collins of Maine. And they had the Homeland Security officials in front of them at the time, so they went ahead and started grilling them on what exactly happened with this case down on the Mexican border. And it was during that hearing that we learned that the senators had already found out that the agencies weren't quite telling them the truth. Now, Homeland told us when we first reported the story that the reason they missed this guy is that he was traveling under an alias. Not true. They had his name. They had his common name. His second, third, and fourth. He has four names. His common name, his middle name, his paternal name, and his maternal name. Well, he wasn't traveling under an alias at all. He was traveling under his own name the whole time. And another excuse they gave was that they had transposed his date of birth. Well, then they claimed to have fixed it the next day. So what that doesn't explain is how, for two more months, this man was able to cross the border another 21 times and get on airplanes and fly domestically in the U.S.
Wait, what is this man's name?
The Mexican national businessman's name is Amado Isidro Armendariz Amaya.
Do we know what his profession is?
He's a businessman whose business required him to repeatedly cross the border into the U.S. He mostly passed in El Paso, but there was about a half dozen other borders that he would come across for a couple of times. But the majority was through El Paso.
Do we even know if his business is legitimate? How did they finally stop this guy?
It looks legitimate as far as I can tell. One other thing that we learned out of what the committee has dug up so far is the way this man was caught was his Mexican doctor seized his passport because he realized that even though he had told him to stop traveling, he realized the patient was still traveling, so the doctor seized it from him and turned it over to U.S. officials.
Now, you mentioned TB Andy. This story is not getting as nearly as much coverage as TB Andy did. Why is this the inequity in coverage, and is it warranted in your opinion?
Well, the difference from what we can tell the small difference between the cases of TB Andy and TB Amato is the amount of time each flew. TB Andy was flying internationally. TB Amato was flying domestically. Now, the standards, however you want to put it, that the World Health Organization and the CDC follow is questionable according to the doctors that we've interviewed. CDC says, well, unless they're on a flight of 8 hours or more, like TB Andy was, then it's not a big deal and we don't need to alert the patients. However, I mean, think about it. You fly from San Francisco to Florida. It doesn't take 8 hours. I can get on a plane right now and go to L.A. in 5.5 hours. There is no domestic flight that lasts 8 hours. So, in effect, the policy of our government is if you get on a plane anywhere in the U.S. and you're traveling with someone with this form of TB, you will not be notified by your government.
Wow. Is this an isolated incident?
We don't know. We found out about this only because sources finally came forward, sources who say they were told that if this story ever leaked, they would be fired. And that's another thing that the committee's investigating as well, and that is who threatened to fire these employees, because that's basically that's unconstitutional. You can't do that. By saying you can't talk to anybody outside of that room, you're effectively saying you can't talk to your congressman, and that is unconstitutional.
I understand you've also been investigating an incident involving Homeland Security and a Christian charity in Africa. What can you tell us about that?
I'm working on a story for tomorrow about a missionary in Pennsylvania, a pastor there. He's been operating an orphanage in war-torn Sudan for 10 years now. He's rescued hundreds and hundreds of orphans. When I talked to him today, he was on his way to a hospital in Pittsburgh with a child who had been shot in the face. He's getting surgery there. It's going to cost him about $50,000 for this. Meanwhile, earlier this year when he was traveling, as he always does, with his supplies, which he says were clearly labeled in the checked crate, he carries supplies to operate the generator over there, which is a few cans of oil, motor oil, a can of WD-40, and some conditioning fluid. Well, this time it was confiscated from him by the TSA screeners, and they said it was a hazardous material, and he couldn't take it with him. And he understood that. I mean, if that's the rules. And he's preparing to fly back over tomorrow, and he's mailing his supplies to him. But meanwhile, out of the blue, he gets a notice from the Federal Aviation Administration that they're going to fine him $28,000 for a few cans of oil, which never got on the plane. So I'm looking into that right now, and I'm awaiting a call back from the folks at the FAA to hear an explanation of this $28,000 fine.
Wow. We look forward to hearing about how that turns out.
Michael, thanks very much.
Thanks, Savage. Audrey Hudson. We've invited back Congressman John Culberson to talk about new developments in his border initiative called Operation Streamline. Now, look, he's been on the Savage Nation before to rally support for this project in a truly bipartisan effort. Mr. Culberson has bypassed the White House and is implementing existing laws to secure our border effectively. Congressman, tell us what happened in Laredo last week.
The Border Patrol's sector chief for Laredo, Carlos Carrillo, announced that he was instituting at my request and with my promise of support from the subcommittee and my colleagues that in the Laredo sector, from this day forward, the Border Patrol will arrest and prosecute all illegal immigrants crossing into the United States illegally. They will be prosecuted under existing law that's been on the books since 1952 and prosecuted, convicted, and sent to jail for up to 6 months for the first offense, up to 2 years for a second offense, and that the Border Patrol is not going to enforce a zero-tolerance policy in the Laredo sector. And that is good news for America. It's good news for Texas. And it expands an existing policy that has been in place in Del Rio for about 14 months. The Del Rio sector, at their own initiative, instituted this zero-tolerance policy. It worked so well, and I was so impressed with it, and frankly so frustrated with the Homeland Security that I went directly to the sector chief in Laredo and was able to work with him and was able to get him to encourage him to institute this zero-tolerance policy in Laredo beginning October 30th.
Well, how is this initiative different from our current catch-and-release approach?
In this, in the Del Rio sector and now in the Laredo sector, thanks to Chief Carrillo, every illegal alien crossing into the United States in Laredo or Del Rio will be prosecuted and convicted if guilty and then sentenced to up to 6 months in prison. And then at the end of their sentence, they are deported in a criminal proceeding. And in the case of catch and release, they're literally in other sectors are unfortunately still apprehending people from Mexico. And if the person is foolish enough to use the same last name, they are released the first seven times they are picked up by Border Patrol in other sectors of the Texas border. They are released the first 15 times they're foolish enough to use the same last name in the Arizona sector, other than Yuma, of the border. This zero-tolerance policy is common sense. It's something that I have been vigorously pursuing, and I'm very, very pleased that the sector chief in Laredo did this, and I'm proud to say he said in his press release today, I would like to especially thank Representative John Culberson for his support of the program and because of his profound interest and his firsthand familiarity that I was the catalyst that made Streamline Laredo a reality today. I'm particularly proud of that, that it shows that an individual member of Congress working with an individual Border Patrol sector chief with the support of my colleagues in Congress and the pledge of financial support if he needs it, we can go right around the White House. We can go right around Chertoff and Homeland Security and go straight to the Border Patrol sector chiefs who want to do the right thing and get them to do it and enforce the law and shut down illegal immigration and restore the rule of law and order to the border.
Well, that's great news. We'd like to see this strategy executed across the entire border. Can this be done?
Yes. In fact, I'm working with my good friend and colleague, Congressman Henry Cuellar, who represents the Laredo area. And he and, of course, the people of Laredo are thrilled with this policy because it means there will be no more criminals or, you know, drug dealers or gang members coming across. This policy in Del Rio has resulted in a 76% decline in the crime rate almost overnight in the Del Rio area. So it's this zero tolerance policy of enforcing an existing immigration law that's been there since 1952 is wildly popular in Del Rio. It's going to be popular in Laredo. And therefore, with my, again, Congressman Henry Cuellar and I are going to be working with other congressmen up and down the river to institute this policy. Next stop will be the Brownsville sector. We're going downriver to seal up the border between Laredo and Padre Island. That's the next step. And we're going to be working on that over the next couple of months. And then that will mean that the border between Del Rio and Brownsville is closed to criminals, but open for business. I mean, if people want to, honest people want to come back and forth, we welcome them. But they got to come here legally and honestly to either do business or visit their families or work, but they do it legally. And then once we get the sector between Del Rio and Brownsville sealed up and closed to criminals, we're going to start moving upriver. And my goal, I will not rest until the entire border is sealed from Brownsville to San Diego, and we've instituted a zero-tolerance policy of arresting and prosecuting and convicting and throwing in jail every illegal alien that crosses into the country from Brownsville to San Diego and then ultimately on the northern border. And I'm very optimistic that this is going to happen because the Democratic congressmen who represent the border areas are sick and tired of the crime. The people that live there are sick and tired of the crime. And frankly, there's bipartisan support for this. I'm just proud to have been the tip of the spear that's making it happen.
Well, after years of this administration ignoring the border, it's encouraging to witness an actual bipartisan accomplishment. I guess that's because the White House has been bypassed.
It's been frustrating for me as a Republican, as a Texan who wants to see the president, succeed. I've done everything I know how to do to work with the White House, and I finally just gave up. I reached the point where they were obviously, Chertoff and the Homeland Security Department were not going to secure the border. It's obvious to me that the lack of security at the border is not accidental. It's not negligence. Therefore, it's intentional. And I just gave up on the White House and Homeland Security. And I'm going straight to the local Border Patrol sector chiefs who are law enforcement officers who want to do the right thing, who have been handcuffed by Washington. And because I serve on the Appropriations Committee, Subcommittee on Homeland Security, and I have the support of my subcommittee colleagues to help these Border Patrol sector chiefs get the money or the support they need because of cooperation from the U.S. Marshal's Office, because of cooperation from the federal judges, from the U.S. Attorney. This is a cooperative effort. I want to thank not only Chief Carrillo, but it's important to recognize the U.S. Attorney Don DeGabriel in Houston, who sent extra prosecutors down. It's important to recognize the U.S. Marshal, who will actually house these people at federal expense in county jails around Texas. And it's important to recognize the federal judges who are responsible for imposing the criminal sentences. This is a truly a team effort that is completely bypassed to the White House and Homeland Security. Since they're not going to help, we're just going to do it ourselves. I'm just fed up. I'm sick and tired of the wide open borders. I'm not going to take it, and I have always wanted action. I'm tired of talk, and we've done it today.
This sounds like good news out of Washington. I'm shocked.
It's important that people know there's good news out there. It's important that people know that the government. We may get frustrated with individual elected officials, and the government may seem at times to be totally dysfunctional. But there are those of us that will not quit. I will not rest, and I will not relent until the entire border is nice and quiet, and there's 100% zero tolerance policy from Brownsville to San Diego, and I'm confident it can be done. The success in Del Rio, the success in Yuma, and the upcoming success in Laredo of shutting down illegal immigration by instituting a zero tolerance policy and enforcing existing law proves the utter falsity of the argument you heard months ago that the White House was pushing and the Senate was pushing with this Kennedy-McCain amnesty bill, that we needed a new immigration reform bill in order to control the borders. It's pure garbage. It's not necessary. There's been a law on the books since 1952, a criminal sanction of 6 months in prison for illegally entering the country on first offense, up to 2 years for second offense, and the Border Patrol sector chiefs, at their own initiative initially with the Del Rio sector and Yuma, and now with my help in the Laredo sector and next in Brownsville, we're going to prove conclusively that law enforcement works. It's common sense. It's fundamental. It is wildly popular with the Hispanic community on the border because they're sick and tired of the crime. You don't need a new crime bill, and you don't need to pander to illegal aliens in order to protect the border and secure this nation. You need to do the right thing for the right reasons and enforce the law and protect this country, and everybody in America can figure it out, and they're all going to support you no matter where they're from. I am so proud of the leadership role that you've taken in this effort, Michael, and all of your listeners. And I want to tell you that it has really made a difference, and very, very grateful for your support. And we're going to keep it up. The goal is zero tolerance from Brownsville to San Diego, and just simply never, ever give up, and we'll get it done.
Well, thank you, Congressman, for helping preserve our borders, language, and culture.
Savage.
Is Michael Savage. What if 20 million illegal aliens vacated America? Asks a gentleman named Frosty Woolridge. Now, I don't know the gentleman, but he's a heck of a writer with good ideas. And I linked up this question, what if 20 million illegal aliens vacated America, to michaelsavage.com. And I highly recommend that you print it up for your liberal friends. And it goes like this. And it starts with a journalist for the Denver Rocky Mountain News who wrote a column about Mexicans. And she interviewed a Mexican journalist who said they, the illegal aliens, pay rent, they buy groceries, they buy clothes. And she asked, what happens to your country's economy if 20 million people go away? He answers, that's a good question. It deserves an answer. Over 80% of Americans demand secured borders and illegal migration stopped. But what would happen if all 20 million or more vacated America? In California, if 3.5 million illegal aliens move back to Mexico, it would leave an extra $10.2 billion to spend on overloaded school systems, bankrupted hospitals, and overrun prisons. It would leave highways cleaner, safer, and less congested. Everyone could understand one another as English became the dominant language again. In Colorado, 500,000 illegal migrants, plus their 300,000 kids and grandkids, would move back home, mostly to Mexico. That would save Coloradans an estimated $2 billion. Other experts say $7 billion annually in taxes that pay for schooling, medical, social services, and incarceration costs. It means 12,000 gang members would vanish out of Denver alone. Colorado would save more than $20 million in prison costs and the terror that those 7,300 alien criminals set upon local citizens. Denver officer Don Young and hundreds of Colorado victims would not have suffered death, accidents, rapes, and other crimes by illegal aliens. Denver public schools would not suffer a 67% dropout, flunkout rate via thousands of illegal alien students speaking 41 different languages. At least 200,000 vehicles would vanish from our gridlocked cities. Denver's 4% unemployment rate would vanish as our working poor would gain jobs as at a living wage. What about Florida? In Florida, 1.5 million illegals would return the Sunshine State back to America, the rule of law, and English. In Chicago, Illinois, 2.1 million illegals would free up hospitals, schools, prisons, and highways for a safer, cleaner, and more crime-free experience. If 20 million illegal aliens returned home, the U.S. economy would return to the rule of law. Employers would hire legal American citizens at a living wage. Everyone would pay their fair share of taxes because they wouldn't be working off the books. That would result in an additional $401 billion in IRS income taxes collected annually and an equal amount for local city and state coffers. No more push one for Spanish or two for English. No more confusion in American schools now that must contend with over 100 languages that degrade the educational system for American kids. Our overcrowded schools would lose more than 2 million illegal alien kids at a cost of billions in English as a second language and free breakfasts and lunches. We would lose 500,000 illegal criminal alien inmates at a cost of more than $1.6 billion a year. That includes 15,000 MS-13 gang members who distribute $130 billion in drugs annually. They would vacate our country. In cities like Los Angeles, 20,000 members of the 18th Street Gang would vanish from our nation. No more Mexican forgery gangs for ID theft from Americans. No more foreign rapists and child molesters. Losing more than 20 million people? Why? That would clear up our crowded highways and gridlock. Cleaner air. Did you hear that, Libs? Cleaner air. Cleaner air and less drinking and driving American deaths by illegal aliens. Read the entire story and you'll find out why we're suffering an $8.7 trillion debt. It's because of the things I just mentioned. It's also because 400,000 anchor babies are being born in our country every year, costing us $109 billion per year per cycle. At least 86 hospitals in California, in Georgia, and Florida would still be operating instead of being bankrupted out of existence because illegal aliens pay nothing via the EMTOLA Act. Americans wouldn't suffer thousands of TB and hepatitis cases rampant in our country, brought in by illegals unscreened at our borders. It would also put the progressives on the horns of a dilemma. Illegal aliens and their families cause 11% of our greenhouse gases. Over 1 million of Mexico's poorest citizens now live inside and along our border from Brownsville, Texas, to San Diego, California, in what the New York Times called colonias or new neighborhoods. Trouble is, those living areas resemble Bombay and Calcutta, where grinding poverty, filth, diseases, drugs, crime, no sanitation, are worse. They live without sewage, clean water, streets, electricity, roads, or any other kind of sanitation. The New York Times reported them to be America's new third world inside our own country. Within 20 years, at their current growth rate, they expect 20 million residents of these colonias. Now look, ladies and gentlemen, by enforcing our laws, we could send them back to Mexico. If 20 million aliens were invited to go home and deported and fix their own countries, they could make a better life in Mexico. We could invite a million more people into our country legally, by the way, if we wanted to do it. Frosty Woolridge, congratulations. You're doing a great job. His article, What If 20 Million Illegal Aliens Vacated America, linked up on michaelsavage.com. I suggest you print it and put it into your window. 1-800-449-8255 is the phone number. michaelsavage.com is where you can find that article and all of the others I have talked about or touched upon today on the Savage Nation. If you'd like to talk about this article or any of the others, you can give me a call at the number I have just mentioned to you. Let us begin in Portland, Oregon, with Brian on KXL. Brian, go ahead, please.
Thanks for taking my call, Michael. The reason why I'm calling is I'm a contractor, and I work for Freightliner, and I'm concerned about what the government is doing with H-1B visas. My understanding is the intent of an H-1B visa is to bring someone in from outside of the United States to fill a position because an American citizen cannot fill that position, is not qualified to fill that position.
That's theoretically the reason for it, but it isn't. The reason Bill Gates, the richest man in the world, wants tens of thousands of more H-1B visas is because he's a cheapskate. He's a skinflint. What he wants are cheaper workers, not more workers. He wants cheaper workers from India and from Asia. He's not willing to train and pay Americans to do the jobs. He's willing only to import them at lower wages. These people are the robber barons of today, only they're disguising themselves as nice guys. Make no mistake about it. Bill Gates didn't get where he is by being a nice guy. Bill Gates is the robber baron of our time. And it's a shame that he gets away with this lie that he needs more H-1B visas. I know what you're saying.
Yeah, the same is being done by Freightliner. There are, I feel for the people that are American citizens that are doing the job, but the reason why they're bringing these H-1B visas in through a company called NCAT is they're bringing 350 of them over here because they can hire them for $22
Brian,
an hour.
Why do you think they're bringing in nurses from the Philippines? Why, there aren't American women who'd like to be a nurse? But these cheap SOBs who run the hospitals and the HMOs are not willing to pay American women or American men the wage necessary to be a nurse. So they bring in people willing to work for third world wages who live 10 to a room, and we pick up the social costs on the side through tax. The whole system is rotten from the top to the bottom, which is why the politicians have such low ratings. We know that they're all corrupt, and we understand that they're all going to be thrown out. Most of them will be thrown out in their keister. And there's not one campaigner right now that anybody has any faith in, which is why nobody's watching these debates. Thanks for the call. Nobody's watching the debates except Beltway people and people in the internet, in the business of watching these debates and talking about them. Who cares about them? If there really was an outstanding candidate who spoke for America, do you realize that most of them are lawyers, with the exception, I think, of John McCain? Do we really need a lawyer running America? Is that what America needs right now, is an attorney running the country? I don't think so. In fact, I would guess so. Well, there it is. That's it for this hour on the Savage Nation. We've talked about what is torture, and I have told you that the best way to stop a liberal in her tracks is to say, put the following question to her the next time she gives you her liberal double talk. Let's say she looks like Barbara Boxer and she sounds like Barbara Boxer. And let us say that she has a big mouth and she's from Brooklyn or somewhere in that region, and no one's ever been able to get a word in edgewise. Say to her, hey, honey, let me ask you something. You got a man who is about to set off a bomb in Times Square, or better yet, Brooklyn College. You got him in a holding cell in the detention center in Manhattan. You got 5 minutes to find out where that bomb is. Tell me how you'd break him, no doubt through your cookery or by forcing him to listen to you. I would think that would break any terrorist, forcing him to listen to the best words of Barbara Boxer. This is the Savage Nation. Savage. Be here.